Hi, this is Lori, your host of Happiness Hangout, a space to come and elevate your happiness levels. You, me, and our guests will discuss and help you apply happiness to all aspects of your life, even if you're already happy. Get your daily boost of information to help you feel your best. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Happiness Hangout. This is your host, Lori Peters. The Happiness Hangout is a place and space to help you feel your best. We're very excited tonight to be talking about empowerment of women. And as I put out there on social media, I do hope a lot of men will join us tonight in hearing about the way we speak about empowerment of women, because it really will help you support the women in your life. So I hope we have a really good mix of both genders on the show. And to help me talk through the topic, I have Lisa Marie Jenkins. She is the founder of Igniting Brilliance Through Feminine Leadership. That's a consulting company providing professional businesswomen mentoring, personal and professional development, and peer group interaction to support each other in becoming authentic and powerful women in order to help heal and transform the way we all work, lead, and live. Lisa Marie is a Huffington Post blogger, has delivered keynotes and workshops to professional women at Google, Xerox, and many other women's organizations. Prior to launching her own consulting company, she spent over 20 years in senior sales and marketing roles at Fortune 500 high-tech companies and was recognized as one of the 200 most influential women in her industry. One of the reasons I asked Lisa Marie to be on the show today is because I really feel her message is unique when it comes to the 21st century woman and her role in human evolution. Lisa Marie knows that women will have to step up with courage and confidence to invoke the divine feminine in order to help heal and transform the world. Creating masculine and feminine balance within ourselves and the world is key to transformation in both women and men, but women will be the ones to lead this paradigm change. A true feminist is not about equality, but about leading from the heart and shifting how we all work, live, and lead. Listeners, our guest on the show, Lisa Marie Jenkins. Welcome to the Happiness Hangout, Lisa Marie. How are you tonight?
Thank you, Lori. I'm fabulous and thrilled to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I have so many questions for you. I would kind of like to just launch in, if that's okay with you.
Sure, absolutely.
The first thing that comes to mind, you know, as I've progressed through life, I've been through various stages of life. I took my path a little differently, but I still connect to a lot of women as I have been very I would say very lucky and humbled to be a part of my sorority on a national level, at the top level, all the way to local levels and everything in between. So I have had the pleasure of working with many women, many personalities over the years. And what I have learned is we go through different phases in life, obviously. There's a balance we try to all get to, and we go through times when we're more involved in things for ourselves and times when we have to be less involved in things for ourselves. But there are times, especially I think when raising children or we're very involved in family, where we might not really be thinking about our passion and our purpose in life. And you know, once we get married and have the children, et cetera, how do we deal with when kind of our passion has to be put on hold? How would you just kind of respond about passion and women's passion?
So I think that's, you hit on a lot of things, but I'll start with definitely for women, women can be too others focused almost always. Right, and it's especially easy to do that when you're raising young children, because you do have to be selfless to an extent, because you're thinking of them most of the time, and you're responsible for other little beings. But I think that for women, we can be too selfless almost always. We're always considering everybody else, putting everybody else's needs before our own. And I love the analogy of, it's like when you get on an airplane and they explain, if you need to use oxygen and the mask drops, please put your own mask on before assisting others. And mothers have a really hard time understanding that. I mean, I'm a mother. My kids are grown now. They're 21 and 24, but I was a working mom. I took 5 years off during that time. But But if you're not filling your own cup, then you're limited to how great you can be there for anybody at any level to an extent. So you always have to be refilling your own to have more to give to those that you truly love and care about. And I also think that women can mistake in their passion or their purpose, if you will, for the roles they play. I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a wife, I'm XYZ, you know, title at work. And women forget that that's not your purpose. That's just the roles that you're playing in your life. So I think that, yeah, maybe you don't have as much time to really pursue what you want when you're raising a family, but you got to always stay in touch with that and be bringing that in and making sure that you're tuned into your own needs, because that just makes you a better mother. That just makes you a better wife. That just makes you a better friend when you're really tuned into what lights you up.
You know, I totally agree with that. You know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and my mom, I think my mother came more from that background that you were told that, remember that commercial, I can make the bacon fry it up in the pan. Well, I think that was my mom. I mean, we owned businesses. My mother worked, she raised me, she cooked, she cleaned, she did all of that. And I knew she was very tired. And she said, literally, she only had one child and she would have liked to have another child, but she felt like life circumstances, it wouldn't have been good because she wouldn't have been able to give enough time to a second child because of all the other things. And I wonder if my generation has sort of learned from that, that whole perfectionism. Mm-hmm. Perfectionism is never good. And, you know, I teach in counseling, and we talk about perfectionism and how it hurts people who get mental disease from trying to be perfect and trying to prove that I'm competent and all of that. You know, how do you think women these days need to handle, because, you know, we came from our mothers who had that background, and then we're trying to have our own, we're trying to establish our own parameters and the way we want to do it, but we get those mixed signals. How do we work through that? And how do we put ourselves out into the world where we're told to be perfectionists, but we know it's not realistic?
So I have a lot to say around perfectionism, but I'll start with number one. I think we're finally coming out of this belief that we have to do it all. And it's interesting because I was at a women's group. They meet once a month, and it's called Women Influencing Needed Change. It's a local group of professional women here in Tampa. But the guest speaker last night, her name is Alex Sink, and she, elected official, she ran for governor. She literally lost the race by 1% a few years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
It was the closest race ever. But she was the vice president of operations over at Bank of America. So she was pretty before she entered politics. So she was in the corporate world. But somebody asked her a very similar question, and I want to share that with you, and then I want to give you my thoughts on perfectionism as well, because it's huge for women, and talk a bit about the history of that. But she said women have to stop thinking it's everything is their role. Fortunately, we're coming up with a generation of men that are younger. You know, I would say when I see couples in their 30s, I see men way more involved into child rearing, household chores, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But women have to be willing to delegate that and give it up. And you know what? If you're very career focused, hire a housekeeper. Make sure she does your grocery shopping for you. Hire somebody to take care of your yard. Hire somebody to do the things that free you up so when you are home, you can be with your kids and be totally present because the chores are taken care of. And I see a lot of women do this. It's like their husband, they don't do the child bathing, dressing, dinner the same way they would. So they say, forget it, I'll just do it myself. When it's like, so what? It might not be perfect in your world or how you would like to have it done. But they're helping out. So let them delegate. Let them take that role and don't criticize them, you know, men for when they step up to be true partners in relationships and in families. Don't criticize them for not doing it perfect or not doing it just like you. I think that's huge for women. So leading that into perfectionism, Lori, if life was one big long grade school, women would be irrefutably ruling the world. Because what did grade school do to girls? It taught us to be perfectionism. It taught us to be quiet. It taught us to follow the rules, and it turned us into a bunch of approval seekers, right? Because we seek so much, we get so much praise and approval for doing those things, being perfect, being quiet, following the rules. But it didn't help us to navigate in the real world, because it didn't teach us how to question or challenge authority when it needed to be. It didn't teach us to find our voice and to speak up as needed. And that perfectionism is, there's two things with perfectionism. You can't ever have perfectionism. So two things happen is you're always waiting to take action and to take risk and to move to another level until you get it perfect. Well, you're never going to get it perfect. And then so you, what it does is it restrains you and it keeps you from moving forward and actually learning and growing, because it's through stepping out and taking a risk and making a mistake or failing, that's ultimately how we learn. Because confidence and action are interrelated. So you can't learn confidence without taking action. And I think that women focus often, this is what I saw in the professional world, is women focus too much on proving competence, which goes in line with perfectionism, as opposed to developing confidence to step out and speak up and take risk. And so it's sort of a, perfectionism can be sort of a brilliant hiding strategy, if you will, for women to play bigger in their lives or their careers or whatever, in any way at all, because I'm not going to do it until I have it perfect. Well, you're not going to ever have it perfect, so you're never going to do it, right?
Right.
I say just drop it. Perfectionism is a confidence killer, and it's really a hiding strategy for you not to play big in your life and to step out and take some bold action somewhere.
All right. Well, you know, there's two areas I'd really like to talk about, because our listeners, and I do hope there's, we'll get to the men later, but in terms of women who are following a career path and moving on a career path, that's one piece of it. And then there's women who are at, you know, places in their lives where they stay home and raise children, but mm-hmm. they may want to still be leaders. They may want to still have things in their lives to continue to keep their momentum going as a human being. Can you
Absolutely.
Speak first to career women? Like, what are some things, and we'll talk about your book in a little bit, but what are some things, even from your book or from what you've learned, that women can do who are going up the career ladder?
Well, I want to preface this with, first of all, there seems to always be a continuous battle out there, and you see it in the media a lot about what's right when you're a mother. Do you pursue a career? Should you stay home? And it seems like each side kind of judges the other side. And so I want to preface with, there's no right or wrong answer there, right? It's whatever is right for you as an individual woman. And I stayed home for 5 years, and I reentered the workforce full time after that. And I lost a lot of confidence when I stayed home for 5 years. And it's what I wanted to do, because that was a priority to me. It was just too chaotic for me to work and have two children. But it can be sort of a thankless job, right? You don't get a lot of attaboys, or you don't get, you know, a lot of great job mopping the floor and doing the laundry and getting the kids fed today. So I think it is really important that you always have a piece of you that's outside of home and family, whether it's a volunteer organization, or maybe it's going to school for even just a class or two because you decided you want to work on your MBA. Or there's a lot of things. So I think anything that keeps you involved and feels like you are contributing to the world in a positive way, or maybe it's developing a skill for you. Maybe you've always wanted to take painting lessons. So you're a stay-at-home mom. Well, every Tuesday, you know, when the kids are in school, you go to painting lessons. I'm just throwing stuff out there, Lori, but the point is mm-hmm. that stay involved in something that keeps you stimulated and keeps your light shining, so that you don't feel like a scullery maid, right? So that you don't feel like all you're doing is drowning in exhaustion, taking care of everybody else's needs and running kids around like a taxi driver and cooking and cleaning and, you know, all of those things, right? You have to keep filling that own passion of what lights you up. And it doesn't mean that you have to do something huge and grandiose. It just means you have to explore what really lights you up, what really brings you joy in life besides, you know, loving and raising your family. And for a career woman, it's tough, right? If you're doing both, you've got a career, you could have a husband, you've got children, all of those things. So where's time for me? I'm lucky to get a workout in, right? That's what a lot of women feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's critical that you find some, you carve out some time for yourself that is really about, and this is where I think it's huge. We talk about this work-life balance thing all the time, especially for career women, is how do we find work-life balance? Work-life balance, well, there's two answers to that, and part of it is there's never a perfect balance. It's always recalibrating and rebalancing to find that. So it's never like, oh, I finally make it and I've got work-life balance. It's just something that your progress has to work at. But here's a new shift to look at. We've for generations and generations, we've looked at work as very separate from our home life. And with the world becoming more and more virtual and with the internet, people are doing not traditional work jobs anymore, where they literally leave the home and go somewhere from 8 to 5 every day. So that's fortunate that that's changing that. So a lot of women, even if you're a stay-at-home mom, you could have a small business idea and you could start it up very part-time from your home. So that's another great way if you have a passion towards creating some sort of business that you could do from home by using the internet. So I think work-life balance is why can't your work be your life work as well, right? Meaning you might have a traditional type of job, but why can't that be your life work in that you're showing up there really to elevate people? And what is your personal brand when you go to work? How, when you interact with other people, what's your personal brand? Meaning, how do you leave somebody better off because they interacted with you? And that's where we have to start approaching life more, is what we're offering and what impact we're making and how we're showing up for others and helping them feel more elevated. I mean, have you ever talked to somebody, Lori, like face-to-face and maybe in a big atmosphere, maybe a party or a conference, and that person had the ability to, even though there were hundreds of people around, they had the ability to make you feel like you were the only person in the room when they were talking to you?
Yes, which is a true gift, because women typically are so good at relationships and understanding people. And even though we say, you know, the old model is business is separate from this, is
that's
it's
exactly
just
what business needs.
it's just business. Well, it isn't, because how do you not bring yourself to work? So I think women are really good as long as we do it in a way that
we have to be willing to break the old mode of doing it the very masculine way that's just linear,
yes,
analytical, logical, and it's about competition and it's about winning. We have to bring in – see, I have this slide that I use in presentations, and it says no more B2B, which is business to business, B2C, which are very common terms in the business world, right? It's all H to H, which is human to human, because that's what runs every business, is human to human. And so the happier – more creative, more successful people we have that feel successful in their lives, the better employees they are and the more creativity and the more innovation they bring to the workplace itself. So you have to – that's my big thing about corporate, is we've got to start addressing the whole being, because if you're not a happy person at home, you're not going to be a happy person at work either, right? So, I mean, we drag our dysfunction right into work, right? It's not like we separate who we are as a being when we are at work versus we're at home. So – it's about, I always say we focus a lot on developing hard skills in people, meaning different types of training and business acumen and so forth, but we don't address the personal development of helping people get over their fears and to find their voice and to, you know, tap into their creativity. And so women, like you just said it, women are naturally more emotionally intelligent, but a lot of women are holding back in the workplace bringing that, because they feel like they have to do it the same old masculine way it's always been done. And it can be a scary thing to that was one of my big things. One of the reasons I left corporate was because there was such a lack of passion and purpose and true connection in the workplace. It just felt always intellectual and always about just getting it done, checking boxes without anything passionate behind it or underneath it.
I wonder, though, you know, how I always write a blog before the show relating to the show, and all the stats I looked up, that the majority of small businesses in our country are women owned. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that is really adding to the change, because if women are owning small businesses, then obviously we're out there interacting with all kinds of different people and businesses. So I wonder if that's making, you know, an impact.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, we're in an entrepreneur revolution right now. I mean, it's just the way society is changing because of the internet, and it's really exciting. And I what also to add to that stat, though, that's so the majority of businesses started today, small businesses are start by, and I don't remember the stat, I want to say it's like somewhere around 65 or 68% of new businesses are women started. But on the opposite side of that, women 68 or 70% of women will use their own money to fund their startup, whereas when a man starts a business, he goes and he borrows money and or he gets venture capital money. So that's
interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Only of in the U.S. of venture capital firms, only 2% of funding goes to female-led firms.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
A huge stat. But yet, women are the ones that are really. I think a lot of women leave corporate because they get tired of that. I think they're tired of that culture, and they feel suffocated in it, and they can't be more passionate, more human, and more empathetic and compassionate, and show all of those emotional intelligence traits in the workplace. So I think that's why a lot of women leave, because it's just not a good fit for them, because women are natural collaborators and nurturers. But at the same time, Lori, that's exactly what we need to be infusing in larger organizations. And for me, that's about women learning to find the courage to change the language in business and to redirect, because there are half a dozen studies out there now that prove that companies that employ the most women in the C-level exec roles and on their boards, those companies outperform their competitors on almost every measure of profitability. And it's not because women are better or greater. It's because of the diversity that women bring when they're in the leadership roles that we have greater problem-solving skills. We have greater creativity. We have broader perspective, which leads to innovation and greater success. So it's the idea that we need more of that feminine balance in leadership today.
Right. And, you know, well, we're still talking about corporate. I do want to talk about men supporting women in everything we talk about today, but I don't want to forget to let our guests know or our listeners know that they can call in and they can make comments or ask Lisa Marie. We have Lisa Marie Jenkins with us, and you can call in and ask questions or make a comment at 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. And Lisa, while we're on this topic of corporate, and we'll also talk about a bigger picture of women too, but
Sure. How
can men support women in the corporate role, whether it is a loved one who's a male or men in the corporate? How can they help to bring all those great traits? Because when you have all those traits in an organization, obviously it makes for the best organization. What can men do?
Well, I think the biggest thing is men need to still be very aware that there is, you know, I don't think there's, in the U.S., we don't have an equality issue. We have equality as women. We are empowered as women in the U.S. and in most, and, you know, Western and industrialized countries. Do we still need a few policy changes? Sure. Do we still need some changes around some work-life balance policy and pay parity?
Salary.
Like that.
Salaries.
Yes. Yes, pay parity for sure. But as a whole, we have equality for the most part. But we don't have gender equity. And there's this thing called unconscious gender bias that happens. And it goes back to when you were talking about your mom. And it goes all the way back to caveman days, really. But it really didn't even start shifting into the 70s, where women are seen as emotional, supportive, nurturing, and nice. And men are seen as driven, provider, a leader, that sort of thing. And what happens is when a woman is anything but sort of nice first, and she steps into being a real driven leader type of person, she's judged very harshly. And I'll give you an example of this, and then I'll lead back to what men can do. And it's really the biggest thing men can do is start becoming aware that this unconscious gender bias or this judgment still exists, even if you're very pro women. And if men are still the primary leaders in all business and in politics. I mean, we've closed the gap on middle management, but leadership is by far, and I'll give you one stat just to sum it up. If Fortune 500 CEOs in the U.S., 4.6% are women. Right? And at the,
yes.
and at the
I've
current
heard that.
trajectory, it will take 200 years for women to reach parity with men. Okay, so that's a problem. That's a gender equity problem. Like, why, you know, we've been full-blown in the workforce since the mid-80s, so we've had 30 years now to, you know, it's not a pipeline issue. We're more educated. Women earn 60% of all bachelor degrees and 65% of all graduate degrees today. So it's not a competence issue. It's not a pipeline issue. It's many, but you know, we talked about motherhood. Many mothers are staying in the workforce even though they're raising a family. So I'll give you a great example. You might have heard this story, but when men hear this story, they have the biggest aha moment. So there was a woman named Heidi Roizen. She was an Apple executive, and she left, and she started a venture capital firm in Silicon Valley. She was so highly successful that Harvard did a business case review on her. Two professors at Columbia Business School took this case study, and they divided their students into half. So male and females represented equally in these two groups. They gave one half of the class the original case study with Heidi Roizen. They gave the other class, the other group of that class, the exact same case study. They changed one word, Lori, one word. They changed Heidi to Howard. And then they polled these groups. So each group found that Heidi and Howard equally competent. I kind of go, well, duh, how could you not? They're same education, same success, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they loved Howard. Howard was a great guy. Totally trust Howard. He's a true leader. Would love to work for him. Heidi, we don't like her. Don't trust her. She's out for herself. Wouldn't want to work for her. So how is it that we see a woman so differently when she's highly successful and driven? Right, so there's this double-edged sword for us, right? So that's why women, one of the reasons I call perfectionism a brilliant hiding strategy, because it's scary for women to play big and go out in the arena because we're going to get so much more criticism. So what can men do is just be aware that this unconscious gender bias exists in all of us and start noticing it, start calling it out, start seeing where, you know, unconscious gender bias or anything unconscious, it's old judgments, and unless you consciously are aware of what's really happening, you're not going to make a shift. So I think that's the biggest change that men can make is notice that it exists. And something as simple as when you're reviewing resumes, make sure the first name's not on them. So, you know, fortunately, there's a lot of names that can be male or female names, say first names. But, you know, that right there can just take it out. But I think it's letting men understand like some of these, the gender inequity that exists today and that this unconscious gender bias still exists today in all of us. And if men are still the primary decision makers, then the men are the ones that can start moving this for us.
Understood. And, you know, to our listeners out there, if you're in the corporate world and you have questions or issues, please feel free to give us a call again at 888-627-6008. And I kind of want to move this, Lisa Marie, in a direction of generalities here.
Sure.
When we're talking about having a purpose in life or a calling, I mean, for some people in general, you know, it can be career driven, it can be family driven, it can be volunteer driven, it can be lots of different things.
Yeah. So that's true. And it doesn't have to be something big and grandiose either. But everybody has a passion, a calling, and I think that oftentimes we think it has to be something so big that we don't know what it is, we don't start, and it doesn't. It can. Each one of us has a unique gift, as unique as each of our thumbprints, right? We have something that we came to share with the world, and it doesn't mean that you have to go out and be a CEO. It doesn't mean that you have to be a famous writer. It doesn't have to be anything big, but you have something special, some special message, some special gift that when you share with the world, it lights the world up a little more. So your passion is usually found in what you can't wait to do again, what you lose all sense of time when you're doing it. It also can bring up fear if you think about going there. It can also be something that you're consistently resisting the calling to go do it. But basically, it's anything that brings you joy and anything that lights you up. When the more that you get into, you stand in that and participate in the things that bring you joy, the more joy you automatically contribute to the world. So passion doesn't, you know, I'm passionate about a lot of things, but for me, this was my calling, right? To really help women find their voice and to learn confidence to take risk, because women play such a huge role in our evolution as a species right now, because we've got to get back to a place of caring about the greater good, caring about community, caring about the world itself, caring about Mother Earth, right? And and our world has been driven by a very masculine power. And when I say masculine, I don't mean men. I mean not necessarily we each have a masculine and feminine side, if you will. So the masculine being the linear, the analytical, the logical, the competitive. It's the left brain, right? You can call it the yin and the yang. They could be interchangeable. The right brain is the creative, the spiritual, the emotional intelligence, the intuitive, the compassion, the empathy, those type of things. And we've been taking, in our world, we've been taking a lot of action from the intellect and from the left, you know, desire, the ego desire to win and succeed, but it hasn't necessarily been inspired action, if you will. So inspired comes from the right brain, and then the action is the left brain just take, you know, carrying that inspiration out into action. And so what I've seen is women, a lot of women still primarily lacking in some masculine to take action on things, if that makes sense. So One of my things is, you know, I talk to so many women, it doesn't matter what they do in the world or if they have a family or don't have a family, but they've got some brilliant idea, whether it's to do something new in the PTO organization, or they have a book idea, or they have a new decorating idea that they'd love to put into a business, or, you know, all of these brilliant creative ideas or thoughts for a book or whatever it may be, but they downplay it and don't really see it as that important or relevant, when in fact that's what really drives me is helping women see, like, no, that's, you need to do that, you need to act on that, you need to find the courage to bring that forth, because you have something to offer and the world needs it. So that's what passion is about, living wholeheartedly.
And the thing is, sometimes we get stuck and, you know, we can't move forward. I mean, do you, and I know you've got your book, I love your book, Wake Up Beauty, It's Not About the Prince. So, you know, I want to talk about your book, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, a lot of these questions are kind of helping bring out the content in the book. But, you know, people get stuck because of various reasons. I mean, they get stuck from guilt, they get stuck from what they think they have to do, they get stuck from where they think they should be or what they think they should be doing. So, well, you know, when you get stuck, I mean, do you have any kind of advice or tips on how to kind of break out of that?
Yeah, there's a couple of things, because I get stuck. I lose inspiration at times. You have to get around a tribe. You got to find your tribe, right? And whatever that is. For me, sometimes it's just going to an entrepreneur business networking local event, right? And just meeting other entrepreneurs that are doing really cool stuff in the world, right? And they may be bigger entrepreneurs, they may be startups, but just hearing their stories, how they got there, the courage they had to get there, like, that brings me inspiration. But I think it's you know, also when you get stuck, it's, you got to evaluate who are you giving your energy and time to, right? If they're not, if they're not your own children under the age of 18, and they're, you know, I'm omitting them from the equation, but they're people that if you put them on a list, if you put the top five people that you spend the most time with, omitting children, right, and you look, you put a plus sign by this person energizes me, and a negative sign by the person, this takes energy for me to be around, it brings me down, it takes a lot of effort to be around this person, I feel drained when I leave, that kind of thing. You have to start looking at who are you surrounding yourself with, and if it's not somebody that's bringing you up and helping support you in your own dreams and your own confidence, then it might be time to kind of do a little house cleaning. And a lot of times these can be obligatory feeling type of relationships. They might be family members, they might be friends you've had forever. And that's where maybe you just, you know, you love them from afar, or you set some really clear boundaries with how much time you give them. Because if you want to be happy and successful and joyful, you have to hang around happy, successful, joyful people. So that's a great source of inspiration. I think it's really learning, you know, this, I'm 52, and it took me well until I was in my late 40s before I really got just not caring what other people think, right? Not needing.
I'm 51, by the way. I'm 51, yeah. by the way, and I'm right where you are. Yes.
Yeah, learning mm-hmm. that I can let go of needing this external approval. I don't need to live my life by what others think. And I heard an interesting survey recently from hospice, and they said it was like the top. I won't remember all of them, but there was like the top five deathbed regrets, and number one was not living my life for myself, but living it to please others. I mean, think about that. And that's everything we're talking about. You're living your life to please externally instead of living your life from the inside out. So, you know, I kind of have, in my book, I have these, a short, at the very end of it, I have some steps to waking up, to coming home to yourself, which is about coming into your own passion. Because, and by the way, the title of the book, Wake Up Beauty, it's not about the prince. It's not a relationship book. It's really kind of a metaphor for especially women, men though as well. We are conditioned that, so I'll just tell you a little. So Sleeping Beauty didn't really wake up when Prince Charming kissed her. It's the biggest, fattest lie we've ever been told as little girls. Sleeping Beauty, when Prince Charming kissed her, she went to sleep on her own passion and purpose and worth because she believed romantic love was meant to provide that to her. So it's about stop waiting to, you know, to be rescued or given permission and to go out and do it for yourself, whatever it is. So we can get really focused on external things instead of getting focused on the internal things that light us up and then bringing those into the world. So it's about letting go of the need for approval, letting go of living your life for what others think you should do or expected you to do or what you were conditioned to do in your upbringing or what teachers told you to do or whatever it is, but learning to tune in what that is for you that really lights you up. And it's about learning to believe in yourself too, Lori.
And, you know, I don't mean to sound flip about. Well, and, you know, I don't mean to sound flip about this, but, you know, if you're in terms of if you're with a partner and he, you really have to look at that because that is a huge part of your life. Is there support there? Is there not support there? And that is, again, I don't mean to sound trite or flip, but that is huge.
One of the reasons, I mean, look at the divorce rate, right? And it's not getting better. It's continuing to get worse because women are evolving more quickly than men, right? We're evolving more spiritually, more quicker. We're coming into balance with that masculine and feminine. Most men are still living primarily in their masculine and not in touch with their feminine because a lot of them weren't allowed, right? Big boys don't cry, no kinks in the armor, don't show any emotion, don't show weakness, right? So they haven't had the opportunity to explore their,
right.
you know, their feminine side, if you will. They just, and so by we kind of free them up to start doing that, but the thing is a true partnership is about supporting each other in their pursuit of happiness and joy and spirit. So, you know, I mean, that's something you got to evaluate for yourself. Many people stay in marriages for many, many years that are miserable, and it becomes a relationship of tolerance under the same roof, you know. So I think, and it can be both ways, right? If you're not there supporting the other person's growth and pursuit of happiness, then is that even a partnership?
Right. And, you know, with women, you know, the demographics are changing. Women are having children much older, mid-30s, 40, 42 years old with the first child, which is throwing all the stats we used to have are being thrown off because, you know, it's so different. So how do you think that changed? Do you think that's because women are staying in their careers longer? Do you think it's because women know that they don't have to do they're getting educated? Or do you think it's because they don't have to do the whole family thing so early and they can live life on their own terms before they have anyone to answer to? Or is it all those things? How is that changing?
I think it's all of those things, but I think probably the biggest one is, well, I think there's two big ones. Women aren't growing up now with their worth being defined by when you grow up, you get married and you have children and that's your happiness, right? That's your happily up. You know, we're now past that generation that's how we're being raised. So they're not given that as their goal for happiness, right? I mean, we're probably the generation where it was for the first time not pushed as hard. Unlike our mother's generation, that's just what you do, right? You grow, you know, I have sisters that are in their 60s. And they definitely were raised by that's what you do as you get married and you have children kind of thing for happiness. But I think, Lori, there's another piece here, and that we don't feel like we have to do that to be okay with ourselves, right? So women are feeling the freedom, is that really even what I want to do? Do I want to have children? Whereas before it just felt like it was kind of forced on you, like that's just what you did and you followed suit. So women get to choose, and maybe it's, you know, they get to choose and they decide later, which, you know, that's a double-edged sword, right? When you have them younger, you have more energy. But gosh, if I had had my kids, I was 27 and 30 when mine were born, and I look back and think, you know, how young and dumb I was, right? If I was a mother now, right, I'd be so much wiser, so much more patient with my children in general. And so it's kind of beautiful that women are having, you know, God love them for the energy it takes, but God love, you know, that they're going to be way wiser, more patient to have children. But I also think that I know so many single women these days, so many single women that are just struggling to find a good, true partner. And I think it's because men are having a hard time with, well, you don't need me to protect you and provide for you anymore, so I don't know what my worth is in a relationship with you, right? It's threatening to a lot of men. And I'll tell you, I've had men say to me, Lisa, I wouldn't know how to date you because you wouldn't need me. You, like, have everything. You have it all together. And, like, I would never feel good because I don't know what I could provide for you. I'm like, well, why do you have to provide for me? Why can't I just want to be with you and we have companionship and we're playmates and, you know, why does it? Because men are still very stuck and their self-worth comes from providing and protecting, right? They have to be kind of top dog. And so women aren't offering that fulfillment so much anymore, right? You're a big, strong, powerful woman and you don't need them for income, right? And we don't live in a world where we need protection necessarily. I mean, yes, I definitely can appreciate a man that's handy, and I want him to still pick up the bug, and I want him to open my car door. But, but there's, I think that men are going to have to. I think that we're a little ahead, and it used to be men were primarily masculine, women were primarily feminine in their balance, and so there was that made a whole. Right now, the way to make a whole is you have two people that have their male and a female that are two women or two men, whatever, but that there's a masculine and feminine balance in each of us. And when I say that, Lori, please know I'm not talking about sexual orientation. I'm not talking about dress or mannerisms. A woman is still a woman. If we're just talking about a typical heterosexual relationship, a woman's still a woman and a man's still a man. And of course, we still want her to be feminine in her appearance and so forth, and a man to be masculine in his appearance. But that we have to be whole people, self-sufficient whole people, and then we come together. And that makes true partnership, as opposed to taking two halves and putting together to make the whole. We don't live in that world anymore.
Well, Lisa Marie, we actually have a gentleman on the line. So we do have a caller. We have Ryan on line too. So Don, go ahead and put Ryan through. It's good to have a guy calling us, actually. Hi, Ryan. Welcome to the Happiness Hangout.
Oh, thanks, Lori, for taking my call. How you doing today, Lisa?
Definitely. Hi, Ryan.
Love the show here. How you guys doing? The last 20 minutes, you guys have been right on cue with a lot of things. You talk about, like, men, and we have egos, so let's be honest. I mean, you know, we don't want the girlfriend. Exactly, right? We just don't want them to be making, you know, more money than us, obviously. It's just something, you know, you go to a party and stuff, and then you're, you know, well, who's making more money? It's silly and it's ridiculous, but
that's how you guys are. I get it. It's how you're built.
Exactly. Exactly. But my point I was going to make, I was part of the corporate world as well for like 14 years, pretty much most of my career. And I was surprised that number was as low as that statistic was, 4% for women that are CEOs. I was shocked when you guys read that number up. Because the corporate job that I was with, I mean, there were so many women that had higher up positions. I mean, really, managers, I mean, they really, I thought, did a good job hiring women in the particular company I was with. I guess the thing that I kind of saw, which was kind of a bad trend in some of their hiring practices, where, you know, I knew some good women that were, you know, applying for jobs with this particular company, and and they would have like a 3 or 4 year gap of not working because they, you know, they raised a family or they had kids and stuff. They were trying to get back in the corporate world. And it seemed like they were getting turned down for like positions in those kind of situations. And,
really?
Maybe for some women out there that are trying to get back in the workforce. I mean, what would be like maybe some suggestions maybe on their resume, or I don't know if that's maybe your area of expertise, but I hear stutter is a challenge for people trying to get back to work after, especially women who have a long layoff of not working when they raise.
Yeah. Thanks, Ryan.
Like so,
I think that's a
no
good
problem.
Point. I think it's a great point because I have heard, I'll share my experience with that, but I do hear that from women, and I think it's a couple things. I think that I personally did not experience that. So I took 5 full years off, and when I came back to work, the first 6 months that I came back to work, I actually worked part-time, and I made more money, and I'll just tell you, so just so it's, you know, I'm not telling you just how much money I made, but just so you get an idea. So when I left the workforce to stay home with kids, I was making $45,000 a year. When I came back to work 5 years later, I came back for the first 6 months part-time. I was making $60,000 a year. And at the end of that year, I was making $120,000. So I never had to explain myself. I mean, I did take some MBA courses. I took my LSAT. I applied to law school. So I stayed busy mentally because I had to, or I would have gone crazy. But I never felt like, and maybe it's just my experience, I didn't feel like I had to justify it. Maybe I was just lucky. But I think that you can always justify it if you're keeping something going on the side, right? It's no big, yeah, I decided I needed to stay home for 5 years. That was my priority, or whatever number of years it is. But do something on the side so you don't feel like there's this huge gap. You know, you contributed as a volunteer in something fabulous, right, that was business-related, or you did a business aspect of a volunteer organization, or that you took, you know, a class every semester towards your MBA while you were not, you know, something that just says I still stayed mentally. That would be my advice. But I don't think it – personally don't think it should be a problem. I don't
think –
I mean, because
– yeah,
I think women lose.
Yeah.
Said this. I lost a lot of confidence when I stayed home for 5 years. It was tough. I realized how I lost confidence being in the world socially.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, that's definitely a good point. I mean, definitely stay active. I mean, because a lot of people do like the community and stuff. And the company I did work for, I mean, they were real big with community service and stuff like that. And
huge.
I mean, I just remember giving a few referrals to. You know, this company I worked for, and they would consistently, you know, be turned down because, I don't know, they felt like the gap. Well, we're talking, like, your situation was 5 years. I was, you know, having people I sent over there were the one situation, they had twins and stuff, and they were trying to get back in a job, and they just, you know, were working hired and stuff. So that's a good point, you know, always doing stuff with the community and stuff like that, so.
You know, maybe some of the difference in this, maybe some of the difference in this is the fact that people who are, like you said, staying active and doing something, it could be that. It could also be, at least, Marie, you keep talking about the changing confidence level, you know, how that person interviewed, how they, you know, if you come in and talk about, you know, what you learned through child rearing and how it's taught you to be, you know, strong, quite frankly, child rearing. I don't have children, Lisa Marie. I'm one of those, okay? I don't have children. It's probably really hard, is what I'm thinking.
So I think you got a good point, Lori. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. Because at the end of the day, it's, you know, when you're in front of somebody communicating, believe it or not, the human brain, only the words you say are 8% of the communication that the brain receives. 8% are the words, right? The rest is your tone, your inflection. And then the other part is all body language. So are you coming into an interview with, whether you say it directly or not, but you almost have an apologetic attitude towards being out of the workforce for so long? Of course, right? I mean, so I'm a big fake it till you make it person, right? Like whenever I felt not good enough or confident enough or inferior, I just said, I'm just going to act like I got it, right? I'm just going to, I'll figure it out as I go, but I'm going to act, and most men do this pretty well, right? It's like, I'll just act like I got it all together and I know it, and I'll push through it with confidence. And women are the exact opposite. Women always think, and I'll give you, Ryan, this will sum it up, because I think Lori's onto something here about this. There was a study recently done at HP, and they wanted to know why more women weren't going for promotions and upper management roles. So this internal study found that when a job posting went up, if a man met 60% of the desired qualifications, he would go for it. A woman would tell herself she had to have 100% of the qualifications before she would put herself in the arena for the job. So there is this, women keep focusing, I said this earlier, they keep focusing on proving competence instead of developing confidence. And then in another study done about the same time, what they did is they were looking at competency levels. So the men would always overestimate their competence, and women always underestimate their competence when, in fact, they proved equal in competence. I would venture to say, if you weren't in those interviews, that some of it just was a confidence problem in how they positioned themselves, and if they were almost apologetic, which is something that women struggle with in general. I like to say that communication happens in a triangle, and for men, what they do is, if you picture a triangle with, you know, the apex pointing straight up, men come in directly to the point, give you the net, and then if you need supporting details, they'll go down deeper, right, and get wider in the triangle. Most women do the opposite. They come in with all of the detail, all of the supporting aspects, and they go round and round, and then they finally get to the point, like an upside-down triangle, right, if you can picture that. And so there's this gender communication barrier that happens. So women definitely need to learn to be more direct to the point. And I think women can often be apologetic almost in how they speak, almost as if they have to justify what they're going to say before they say it. And I think that if I had to guess what happened in those interviews, I would say that they blamed it on the lack of being out of the workforce, but I bet you the confidence wasn't being energetically communicated in the interview.
Women, if they could tell their story, I mean, talk about stamina and talk about doing lots of amazing things on lack of sleep and getting things done and being productive. If they could tell their story about raising children and that, I mean, it's a heck of a story. So I'm just saying, like it's, you're right about portraying yourself. And I guess I want to end out with just a couple minutes about women in the big picture, Lisa Marie, women and how they can really get into helping the world. You know, when we talk about human evolution and women in the big picture, what advice do you have there for women?
Lori, I'm sorry, I couldn't understand the question. I couldn't hear you well enough.
Okay. How about now? How am I doing?
No, and I don't think I'm on a landline, so I don't think it's me.
Okay. All right. Well, they can hear me at the station. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to just talk for a couple minutes, Lisa, and wrap up. For you all that are listening, there is a blog out there that I put out called "Are Women of 2015 Actually Empowered?" And there is a lot of great information out there about women and what they're doing to kind of move themselves forward, stats and information, and what we can do. And I think Lisa's book could be a great resource for women and men. And again, I think it's so important for men to be able to support women and for men to understand, because, you know, women are obviously being educated and are in the workforce, coming back to the workforce. And, it's a beautiful thing there. So I hope that the empowerment of women and women choosing their passion and doing what they love to do in unique ways and not looking at the workplace as it's always been in terms of, I must be here from 8 to 5. I must work 12 hours a day. Sure, if you love what you do, you can be doing the work in the car. You can be doing it when you have time at home. You can start your own business. So hopefully this has triggered some interesting thoughts in our audience. And I do want to wrap up with Lisa telling you a little bit more about Lisa Marie Jenkins. Lisa, you've been a wonderful guest, really informative. And I want to tell you a little bit about Lisa's book, Stop Waiting to Be Rescued or Discovered and Wake Up to the Beauty, Passion, and Purpose That Lies Within You. Pick up Lisa's new book, Wake Up Beauty. It's not about the prince. You can find her book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or at her website, lisamariejenkins.com. Lisa's site also has lots of great information for women and men, along with her professional speaking, coaching, and presentation skills training programs. So you really got to check Lisa out. You can also go on my website, happinesshangout.net, go to the shopping link at the bottom of the homepage, and purchase it through Amazon as well. So Lisa Marie Jenkins, thank you so much for being here. You've been an amazing guest. So that's it for us tonight on the Happiness Hangout. See you in 2 weeks with our great show, Giving Thanks with a Twist. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, everyone. See you in 2 weeks. Want to find a space to participate in reading, activities, interactive blog, and much more? Check out www.happinesshangout.net. Looking for a speaker or workshop around the area of happiness? We customize presentations to fit your needs. Just click on the My Services tab at the website. You can also support the site by shopping at Amazon or one of our other affiliates. Just go to www.happinesshangout.net and click on the shopping link or go to my page here at BBS Radio.